Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Sober Indian Saturday Night Live. I'm Karen, your host, and tonight we have Lori. Welcome to the show, Lori. How are you doing?
Good evening, Karen. I'm doing really good. I'm really enjoying our spring weather, so I can't complain right now.
Oh, no, definitely not. It's been really nice here, too, so enjoying it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I guess if you wanted, you can tell everybody a little bit about yourself again, kind of do a refresher since I've had you on. I think this is, what, the second time or third time you'll be on? But,
third time, yeah.
And then we can just kind of third, okay. And then we can just go on into what you wanted to discuss.
Sounds good. Okay. I'm an Anishinaabe indigenous Ikwe, or people refer to us as Ojibwe. So I'm an Anishinaabe Ikwe. What some people would refer to as in English as an Ojibwe woman. I'm from the Manitoba area. I'm indigenous to Manitoba on both sides of my family, on my dad's side and my mother's side. They're both indigenous to Manitoba, and I really appreciate where I come from. I appreciate the land that I come from. And in terms of that background, and Indigenous people in Canada, historically, you know, unfortunately, we're affected by colonization and assimilation policies and residential schools, and of course, during the fur trade era, alcohol and addiction. So it's been in my family for many generations, and I feel like I'm, you know, in terms of my conduct and going forward with my children and my grandchildren, I feel more confident about having a bit of a better hold on it. So for myself, I feel like for healing, because it's one thing to get sober, but when you become sober, the truth also is more apparent, and it can be very, very difficult to deal with. So while I've been on my sobriety journey, which has been for a very long time, I can't remember how many, I know it's over a decade, but I can't remember exactly how long. So it's been that long for me. And like I said before, it was kind of like almost like a rites of passage when you went into your adolescence that you started consuming alcohol. You know, sometimes we would do it with some of the adults, or else we would steal some little brown stubby bottles and go drink by the river. Like it was like something you were supposed to do. Like that was the sense that myself and my friends got from it, so it was quite normalized. So now in my life, like, to have alcohol in my home is something that doesn't happen, and to have alcohol at my family gatherings with my immediate family, that's not something that happens. So I'm really happy about that, because with that alcohol, you know, a lot of the intergenerational trauma comes out as well, and just can create another layer of trauma or another layer of family conflict. So in being sober and, you know, having more of a clear mind and having to deal with the things that I was coping with through using alcohol, because alcohol was like an escape. I got to rest from my mind and my body and my emotions. and my spirit as well. So in becoming sober, I really had to start looking at myself honestly, and that's a really tough thing to do. And it's not that it can't be done, it can be done, but it is difficult. And with some of the healing that I've been going through, like what I've become aware of, and is that we all have this, you know, fundamental universal awareness that it comes from somewhere, that we all deserve to have a good life, to live that mino bimadzi, when we call it in our language, to have that good life journey. However, that with that life journey that we're going to have, that suffering it's inevitable. It's going to happen. But it's how we deal with that suffering. And sometimes suffering is way different from trauma, like losing my mother. That was, you know, it was somewhat traumatic, but it was more suffering from grief of the loss of her, you know. But going through being sexually abused, that's trauma, right? That's not just grief. That's very, very severe trauma. So in learning these things, I got told by this elderly woman years ago, and she was a residential school survivor, and she told me, she said, that you have a responsibility to share our stories, because her and another woman were sharing their stories about what they had gone through in residential school. And she said, the reason that you need to share our stories is because we all need to know why we're the way we are. Because if we don't understand why we're the way we are, we're not going to heal in that good way that we need to heal from what we've been through. So for myself, in terms of the healing that I've gone through, where I grew up, we have a huge Roman Catholic church, and we had a big residential school, but that's been torn down. Church is still there. So I got brought up in the Catholic faith, but also that connection to the land. Like we lived, we had subsistence living. We lived off the land according to the seasons, you know, lived off the animals, the plants, the berries, the fish. We did all that because I come from a huge family. So I got to experience both of those things, but from that part of our land-based living, that indigenous spiritual connection was disconnected, and our spiritual life was at that church. So we ended up, by that happening, what I see now is being disconnected from that spiritual part of myself, who I am, who I was born to be, or what I should have been born into as an indigenous person. So in learning about trauma and healing, like I've come to know some awesome individuals who are particularly focused in some areas on Indigenous peoples, like Dr. Gabor Maté and Dr. Peter Levine, right? Dr. Gabor Maté worked with a lot of Indigenous people that were suffering from severe addiction and sobriety issues in east side of Vancouver for, I think, around over a decade. And then there's Peter Levine, who does somatic healing, and that's about getting stuck in those places of our trauma, which can cause us to keep on coping with our addictions if we get stuck in that rut. So for me, like what I've been learning about what trauma is, like we say that word a lot, trauma, but do we even really know what it means? And trauma is what, in plain English, it means when you have a wound. And when we have a wound, it's usually open, right? And it's very raw.
Mm-hmm.
But then once it heals, there's usually a scar. But it never heals completely back to the way it was. And it becomes, you know, it becomes a more rigid spot on our body, or a more tender spot in our body if it's internal, right? Our body is not really replacing what was originally there. So there is that sort of, I guess, physical trauma to the body. But the thing is we all react differently, and we all have this diversity among us, like as human beings. And unfortunately, like with our indigenous experience, that diversity wasn't celebrated. It was frowned upon, and there was this thought back then, you know, through assimilation policies, that we could become this non-indigenous type of human being and completely divorce ourselves from ourselves. And that was the whole purpose of assimilation and colonization of our people. So with that, like we were separated from ourselves in all ways. Like we have a medicine wheel teaching, and the medicine wheel teaching is circular. It's not a hierarchy, you know, of infancy to adolescence. We're not going up a ladder. We're living in a circle, because we come from the land and we return to the land. So in going through all of the things that we've gone through, we had to divorce ourselves from our emotions. You know, when our family members would go to residential schools, they weren't allowed to cry. They weren't allowed to speak their language. Their hair was cut off. Their braids were cut off. Their skin was scrubbed. You know, their brown skin was scrubbed. We were no longer allowed to carry out our ceremonies. Like that was, there was actual law that stopped us from doing that. And then mentally, all of that negative self-talk was born inside of us, right? And in our way of being, in our indigenous way of being, we have instructions of what to do in our lives. And that's different from the colonial perspective. The colonial perspective is about don't do this, don't do that. But in our way of being, it's do this, you know, pursue a good life. And we were being told your life is not good enough. Your prayers are not good enough. Your braids are not good enough, right? There really is nothing for you to cry for. So in all that big, you know, colonial mess, and this has been going on for, you know, at least since 1492, as we have it in the history books, when, you know, Columbus supposedly discovered us. And so we're looking at like 529 years at least of living this type of reality. And with that colonial contact came alcohol. So in trying to survive all of that assimilation, all of that breaking down of who we were, who we are, alcohol became a very strong thing to cope with, you know, that alcohol spirit. And this is, and for a lot of us, this is how we've survived the colonial, big colonial interruption. And a lot of us are healing from it and maintaining sobriety. And a lot of us are still, you know, struggling to stay sober. So with all of that and, you know, and having to disconnect ourselves from our emotions, our bodies, our spirit, our mental way of being, well, if you affect even one, you're going to affect everything. We're not separated that way. In our medicine wheel, all our quadrants are a whole part of who we are. They're all connected. There's no borderline there. And so we can't separate this, but we've come to live in a society today where we do that. We're such a compartmentalized world that, you know, if you have a broken foot, you should be able to go, you should still be able to perform your work on your computer. Well, if you have a sore foot, your mind is going to be focused on that sore foot. And then if you get anxious about something, you might get a stomach ache, right? So there's just so many ways that our body is connected, and through everything that we've gone through historically, it created this huge disconnect. And for me, being a sober person and realizing all these things and gaining knowledge and creating wisdom out of it for myself is I'm connecting with me. I want to know who Lori is. I want to know who I am inside of my body, because that's all I've got. This is my human container that I'm living within for as long as I'm going to be here. And I want to be at peace inside of me. And I want to experience that with sobriety. I don't want to have to pollute my body with substances so that I can manage the day, or I can manage the weekend, or I can manage a situation. Because that's all of the, you know, it didn't matter what day it was. It didn't matter what situation it was. If I thought I needed alcohol, I would use it, right?
Right.
So we've gone through all of this and we're still surviving it. You know, we're still going through so much, and I can only speak as an Indigenous woman, and I know for certain that what I express is hard to hear by many. And the reason I can talk about it without, you know, breaking down and crying and barely being able to speak through my words is because I've already done that. I've done my work. I've done that painful work. And now these things that I share, these are facts of my life. These are facts of my history and where I come from. However, as an Indigenous woman in Canada, there's very little space for me. There's very little space for us Indigenous women in Canada. You know, just a few days ago, an Indigenous woman was found dead at the river in Winnipeg. And that's happening one time too many. It shouldn't be happening at all. And unfortunately, our women are still being devalued. Our women are still being treated as if we're disposable or expendable. We're not. We're life givers. We're the ones that carry that water. We're the ones that give birth to all of the human beings that are here on Earth. And that story needs to shift, and that story needs to change. And the ones that are responsible for protecting us and respecting us need to be taught that. So those roles need to be re-implemented in terms of the space that Indigenous women need to be a part of in Canada or wherever Indigenous women are dealing with these types of situations. But despite all of that, we're still here. We've been very resilient. We've survived all of that so far. We've survived that colonial mess and are living in this colonial hangover and still struggling to maintain sobriety because all of those impacts that I talked about are all intergenerational traumas about our skin being too dark, about our hair not being good enough, about our spiritual ways not being good enough. That was passed down intergenerationally, not even right from birth, from womb to womb to womb. It's in our blood memory. I carry that still. My daughter carries that still. My grandchildren carry that still. And my great-grandchildren are probably going to carry that still. I hope my great-great-grandchildren will feel much different than I do or their, you know, the generation before them. I hope that there's a shift in terms of how we feel here on Mother Earth about ourselves. Because when you don't feel good about yourself and there's something to cope with, you're probably going to find it, which for me was alcohol. It was a good escape, but it also created more layers of problems for me because you're not in control of yourself when you're using substances, especially if you overuse them. So you're not only suffering from the impacts of the past, you're creating problems in your present life.
I had a question.
Go ahead.
What changes do you think need to be made in order to break that cycle, in order for everybody to get in a better place, basically?
Well, we all have to heal, all of us, not just Indigenous people. You know, our colonizers need to heal too, because there's a privilege that comes with colonizers. And if there's a privilege, everybody should have that same privilege, and it should only be to pursue a good life. So that awareness and that, you know, to really learn those seven grandfather teachings, you know, that we walk with as Indigenous peoples, that wisdom, that humility, that honesty, that courage, that respect, that love, and that truth. Like, we all have to do that. It's not just for us as Indigenous peoples to do. We also have a medicine wheel that includes all the races of the world. So we're not an exclusive society. We recognize that we're all part of Mother Earth, and we're all part of this web of life, right? So it's something that we have to change on a global level, because I know that as an Indigenous woman. My Indigenous sisters across the waters are dealing with a lot of the same issues, and that comes from that, you know, what people refer to as patriarchy, where men became the heads of household and women were no longer the keeper of the house and the first teachers of our children. In one fell swoop, you know, sometime during the, especially during, well, before 1492, you know, at that time, women were seen as chattel, as property, and so were children. So that there was that shift that happened, and we didn't have that here. And it, that shift affected us, and it removed our clan mothers and our grandmothers, because we had a clan system where we followed the animals and the natural system, the ecosystem. We followed natural laws, and that was our way. That was our way of being. So, and even learning to respect those things, because we want to reclaim those things, and we want to implement our way of being, because there was never anything wrong with it. You know, we didn't turn around and say, well, you wanna come and live here, you're gonna have to adopt our way of life. You know, you're going to have to braid your hair, you're going to have to do our ceremonies. We didn't do that. Because that's not something you should ever impose on anybody. So what we've gone through is a chronic pandemic of erasing a whole people. And that's a lot to deal with, especially if you're not sure where it comes from and it's just sitting inside of you. Like for me, that was enough to make me drink, and I didn't even know what it was. Like even if I would take care of things as best as I could in my present state, there was always something lingering that would just make, I just felt like I wasn't good enough. And now I know why. So now with all of this, you know, with connecting with my spirit and my emotions and physically and mentally, that one of the things that I have to work really hard at is that positive self-talk. You are good enough, Lori. You are loved. You are sacred. You don't have to drink to feel good. Right? And by living that type of way of life, my health has gotten better. My emotional state is improving. My spiritual state is improving. But it's a long healing process. Healing is a lifelong journey. It's going to be a lifelong journey for me, but I'm glad. I'm glad I can come on a radio show like this with Sober Indians and talk about what I've been through. I couldn't even talk in front of people. I was so shy and I didn't even really know who I was. If you had asked me to do something like this 30 years ago, I would have ran the other way, or I would have just climbed right up at the beginning of the show and not be able to talk because of all of the things I just shared. And my confidence is not ego. I haven't puffed myself up to think that I'm all that in a bag of chips. You know, I'm just a human being that wants to love herself and to be able to give love and to receive love. That's so important, and that's something that we don't talk about enough. And ultimately, that's what happened to us. We weren't accepted for who we were. You know, with our Indigenous story, with my Indigenous story, I wasn't accepted for who I am as an Indigenous person. And then in another way, not accepted as an Indigenous woman. And not to say that my Indigenous male counterparts didn't receive the brunt of a lot of that. They have. And, you know, there's a lot of healing that's happening with all of us Indigenous people. And for me, this has been passed down for 7, 8 generations. this type of messaging, this type of disconnecting. Because if you're not allowed to be a certain way, you know, as human beings, we're very adaptable. You know, just like a living tree, they'll adapt to their environment even if it's bad. It becomes survival. And then we comply with our situations, especially if it's life and death situations, right? Our ancestors were going to jail when they were trying to practice their ceremonies. They would go to jail if they didn't send their kids to residential school. So we stuffed, you know, we disconnected, but the good thing is, in our human container, we were able to stuff it away inside of ourselves somewhere, right? And we detached from it and just left it there. So now we're able to start reconnecting again. And what does a baby need when it's born? When they're first born, they need acceptance, they need acknowledgement, they need somebody to witness that they're there, they need that bonding, right? That is so vital for a human being. So that never changes all our lives. So when we lose that, and we can connect with something like alcohol, that becomes our attachment. That becomes our connection. Because it gives us this, you know, this false sense of that not real. Right? And then as we grow and we're stuffing all this stuff away inside of us, it'll make us sick because we can't truly express who we are. If we can't cry, you know, that is taking away from us something that our bodies are naturally made to do. So in all of our oppression, you know, we've used substances to cope with and addiction, and that's being in survival mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with polluting our sobriety, we're creating this temporary relief or this escape or this way to cope, right? It's only
yeah.
temporary. And like I said before, the long term of it, it causes, you know, it can cause long term harm. And it's not just alcohol. It's not just alcohol that changes like our physical makeup. Like it affects us mentally. It affects our organs. All kinds of things. Like a lot of the time, we don't even realize how much damage alcohol can do to. Our bodies physically, and afterwards it becomes a depressant. So, you know, we might be having a good time coping with the world, but the next day it can be a totally different story than where it can be dealing with more serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we get on that, you know, road of sobriety, and we start our healing. You know, and it doesn't, and I'm not talking about it that's the only way for Indigenous people to heal is by, you know, entering, embracing our traditional ways. Like, we're all diverse. We all have different beliefs. You know, some people are Christian and other faiths and all that. And that's awesome. You know, whatever helps, whatever is good for you, whatever works for you, when it works, when you're ready for it. For it to work, right? But like even in,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you, like when I started engaging in my my spiritual way of being from an Indigenous perspective, it can be pretty easy to redirect that alcohol addiction for a spiritual addiction, you know, and become like there's a term that's used sometimes, ceremony junkie, you know, instead of going to the drinking parties, going to the ceremonies all the time. So like that balance, you know, creating that balance. And sobriety is being sober can be affected not just by substances. It can be affected by things like that, right? Like that we have these chemicals we have these chemical changes that happen in our body, and if we're experiencing these feelings of euphoria when we're in that spiritual realm of things, but we, like all things, we have to keep things balanced. That's what we're taught, is that as long as we have to try and keep that balance as much as we can while we're pursuing our Minubimadzi with. So when we're on this journey, it's like transforming ourselves holistically. Because for me, it's like if something is off, I'm like, okay, if something is off, I feel it. Where is it? Is it my mind? Am I in too negative of a space? Am I feeling sick about something physically? You know, how are my emotions? Maybe I'm repressing too much emotions. You know, spiritually, maybe I'm not. Maybe I don't have as much faith as I, you know, that would be helpful to me. And those are the hard questions to ask myself, because I have to be honest, right?
You're right.
I can't lie to myself. If I'm going to lie to myself, I might as well just keep on having an addiction. You know, that honesty can be, that self-honesty can be pretty brutal. But it does pay off. You know, that the memories of that addicted life become farther and farther away, and I'm so thankful for that. That it doesn't even, it's when it's not a thought. You know, when life is tough, I'm so thankful when that's not a thought. That maybe I should just have a drink. You know, this is too tough. Maybe I should just have a drink. So for me, I'm just so thankful when it's not there. Because then I can tell, like, I'm okay. I'm doing a bit better. But it's like, it's an everyday, you know, 24/7 job. It doesn't go away. It doesn't go away at all. So for me, like what I see myself doing, what I've been doing all these years, is I've been rebuilding my life bundle that's inside of me, so that I can see what's in front of me in present and be present, and what might be my past creeping in, you know. Oh, those are bad memories. Well, yeah, they happened in the past, right? And trying not to stress too much about what the future holds, because there's no guarantees there. So that's what I try to do for myself every day.
Wow. I'm trying to think of a question, and I don't actually have one.
That's okay. So, you know, it's really easy for me to put out my verbal formula, right, that I'm sharing. It's so easy to do that. But I've been living what I'm talking about for over 40 years now, right? It's taken that much time to be able to share what I'm sharing. It wasn't, mm-hmm. it's not an overnight thing. It's not 2 weeks. It's not a month. It's not a year, right? The work is grueling and it's painful. Because we have to look at lots of painful truth and we have to take full responsibility for ourselves. You know, there were times when I was younger when my abusers would put that brown bottle in my hand. But then I got out of that environment and I put that brown bottle in my hand. And I have to take responsibility for when I did that. And it's not fun. You know, but I have to humble myself and I have to take responsibility for what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And apologize too, you know, for some hurts that I've caused. So in all of this process, I'm working really hard at learning to love myself, enough to not put that addictive substance into my body. And I'm reconnecting with who Lori is, right? I'm trying mm-hmm. to return to who my authentic self is. You know, we get taught that in our way of being, we get taught that we tell Creator that we're going to come down here on Earth and we're going to go through that sacred hoop of life through our mother. And we say what we're going to do. And our biggest job is to pursue that Minubima Dizzy Wind, to pursue that good life journey, and to find that love, and to seek out that love, and to live that love. This is what we're told that we're doing when we come and we start being part of, being a visitor to Mother Earth. Right? Because we're not here forever. We're only here for a temporary time.
Mm-hmm.
So for that piece, that's what sobriety is for me. And that's the story that I carry for my sobriety in terms of being an Indigenous woman in Canada. And I can't not tell the historical journey without being able to explain my journey, because it's intergenerational. It's been going on for a very, very long time. And my obligation and my want is to stop that cycle, to stop the cycles of addiction, passing it on intergenerationally, to stop the cycles of violence, the negative talk, you know, that we're not good enough. We are good. We are good enough. And then another piece I wanted to share about was communication. Communication is so important. Like what I'm sharing with you, Karen, and all of you over the radio, it's only 35% of the communication that I can share because it's coming out of my mouth. The rest of the communicating is coming from my body, which is 65%. That's what you're missing out on. But when we're in front of each other, you know, we might think that we're communicating a certain thing by the way that we're talking, but our body might be saying something totally opposite. And again, with that colonial interruption and the onset of residential schools, lateral violence was born there. And we learned how to, through the fear of being there, our ancestors, our people, our family members, through that fear, they were taught to hate each other, to hate themselves, to have that negative mind talk and to speak that negative mind talk, right? That fear of expressing emotions, that fear of violence, right? So we're still recovering from that. We still all practice a lot of lateral violence. So it's really important for us to pay attention when we're communicating. And it might be hard to do, but, you know, when we're talking, we should pay attention to what our body's doing. Are we crossing our arms? Are we pressing our lips? Are we, you know, are we rolling our eyes? Are we looking, do we look in an angry way, or are we open, right? Because we sometimes don't even know what our body's doing when we're talking. So that's how important our healing journey is. And a lot of times with addiction and using of substances, that trauma comes out. And it comes out in a very, very violent way sometimes. So the more cognizant we become of our bodies and the way that we use them and the way that we express ourselves. Because a lot of the times we just think we're, you know, we just communicate out of our mouths, but we communicate with our bodies more than anything. And so for me, like my human container, I try to be very cognizant of what I'm doing, right from my head, right to my toe. If I'm trying to listen to somebody and be respectful and my feet are moving and tapping, I'm like, what is that about? I have to pay attention, right? Then I'll just put my feet on the ground and ground myself so I can be there, so I can receive the information that person is providing to me, right? Because they matter just as much as I do.
Absolutely. Maybe the whole mind frame needs to change for everybody as far as the healing process goes. I believe that I think it would make a difference if people started realizing that we're all human, we all hurt, we all feel pain, we have emotions and so forth, without thinking someone's better than another, because that's really a sad situation when that's happening like that.
Absolutely, and we. You know, in our way of being, we live in that circle. And in that circle, nobody's above or below that circle. And in colonial society, you have a hierarchy, right? Mm-hmm. You have minorities, you have majority, you have all of these, you know, these human-made systems. And We don't have to look very far. As soon as we look at the news, we're looking at pandemic information. We're looking at violence against women. We're looking at racial violence, right? We're looking at substance or addiction issues that are very serious and very detrimental. And it's really not that complicated. You know, we make it complicated as human beings, but it's really not that complicated. We need to feel loved. We need to feel accepted, right? We need that connection to somebody. We need that attachment. We need all of those things in order to survive as human beings. And then when we're not getting them and we're struggling to survive because we don't have those inherent things that a human being should naturally have, that is that we have that inherent natural right to be born into that. All of us to be born into the comfort of our mother, into the comfort of our family, into the comfort of our community. And when we don't have that, that's where our sobriety can get affected, and that's where we can fall into addictions, because we somehow find that, you know, temporarily through addiction. And there is a better way. And like through the Facebook page Sober Indians, like I really enjoy reading all the posts and how proud people are to share about their sobriety and how long they've been sober and the good things that are happening to them. But there's also posts about, you know, somebody's in the hospital or somebody's relapsed and all of those things. And that's what I like about it, is the honesty, and that there is no judgment. There's just love and acceptance there and connection. All the things I've been talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and in terms of us as human beings, you know, we do have responsibilities to carry out, but the rights that we have, like, I have the right to breathe. I have the right to exist. I have the right to be heard. I have the right to say no. I have the right to say yes. I have the right to be in my body. And I have the right to heal. Right? We all do. We all have those.
Exactly.
We all have those rights. And I just keep hoping that we'll continue healing in that good way. And that we'll continue to be good to each other, so that we won't need those substances, so that we won't need to hang on to our addictions. But like on the page, lots of us have been sober for a long time, and it's not like, you know, you get sober in a year and you're gone, you're on your way, right? That you never need that, right? You never need that connection anymore. You do need it. Because it takes a long time, like I said, it's easy for me to spew out all of this sharing that I did, but it's like over 40 years of living what I've lived when it comes to addiction with alcohol. But like I said, I'm really hopeful, and I wake up and I thank Creator for another day of life, and I thank Creator for another day of life when the day is done, and try to live a good day in between, and maintain my sobriety, that connection intact, that attachment, try to stay present, and love myself, love my family, love my community. But that's reciprocated, right? We're all helpers to one another, but even when we're the helper, it's not the person that's receiving the help that's the only one receiving the help. We're being helped 10 times more as the helper. So when I get to do my helping work, I don't take that lightly. I feel very humbly honored to do that type of work, and to know that I'm actually receiving more from it. And I understand that. So it is a good life. I can say that now, like, it is a good life. There are those challenging days. But I just know that it's going to pass. And that I have enough support around me, that I'll be okay. And that to never give up, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, we all have that right to pursue our good life, all of us. No matter where we've been, no matter what we've done, we all have that right to pursue our Minubima Desilin, that good life.
Well, we're down to the last 5 minutes. Is there anybody that you want to mention, or any links to, we were talking about the Indigenous women who were, like the lady that you were talking about that was found recently.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any links where maybe if someone wants to kind of reach out and maybe try to help with that? To get the word out more.
Well, we have we've had the MMIWG final inquiry report was released a couple of years ago by Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's anybody out there listening about this final report, there was 231 recommendations that were brought forward. And their finding was that what's being committed against our Indigenous women in Canada is genocide. That was their finding. And that's the, you know, genocide is the erasure of a group of people, right? Or by taking their kids or removing them. So that's the finding, and those recommendations have yet to be implemented. So if you can, contact the government of Canada and let them know that you would you support those recommendations, the implementation of those recommendations to be carried out immediately. Like I said, those recommendations came out a couple of years ago, and still our women are being found dead in places that are not where they should be. Ending their lives. You know, our women are sacred life givers, like I said. They carry that sacred life water, and our women deserve much better than that. Much, much better. They need to be given space to live and to love and to laugh in a safe way, in a respected way, in a protected way.
Absolutely agree. I absolutely agree with you. I would love to see changes made and something done to stop this, because it really needs to stop. I wanted to thank you for coming on and sharing. This hour has gone by really, really fast, and I wasn't expecting it to go as fast as it did. But it's always a pleasure having you on to talk. And I hope to have you back on again at a later date to talk some more.
Thank you, Karen. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and I hope you have a great evening. I want to tell everybody thank you for tuning in and listening, and to join us again on Wednesday for another show. And I wanted to wish everybody a good night. And thank you.
Awesome. Miigwech.